on a rocky sea coast where shipwrecks were frequent. There was once a ramshackle little life-saving station. It was no more than a hut, and there was only one boat. But the few people who manned the station were a devoted lot who kept constant watch over the sea and, with little regard for themselves or their safety, went fearlessly out into the storm if they had any evidence that there had been a shipwreck somewhere. Many lives were thus saved, and the station became famous. As the fame of the station grew, so did the desire of people in the neighborhood to become associated with its excellent work. They generously offered of their time and money, so new members were enrolled, new boats bought, and new crews trained. The hut, too, was replaced by a comfortable building which could adequately handle the needs of those who had been saved from the sea. And of course, since shipwrecks do not occur every day, it became a popular gathering place, a sort of local club. As time passed, the members became so engaged in socializing that they had little interest in life-saving, though they duly sported the life-saving motto on the badges they wore. As a matter of fact, when some people were actually rescued from the sea, it was always such a nuisance because they were dirty and sick, and they soiled the carpeting and the furniture. Soon the social activities of the club became so numerous, and life-saving activities so few, that there was a showdown at a club meeting, with some members insisting that they return to their original purpose and activity. A vote was taken, and these troublemakers, who proved to be a small minority, were invited to leave the club and start another, which is precisely what they did. A little further down the coast, with such selflessness and daring that after a while, the heroism made them famous, whereupon their membership was enlarged, their hut was reconstructed, and their idealism smothered. And if you happen to visit that area today, you will find a number of exclusive clubs dotting the shoreline. Each one of them is justifiably proud of its origin and its tradition. Shipwrecks still occur in those parts, but nobody seems to care much. Obviously, the structure of the life-saving stations means nothing without the spirit and the discipleship of the people. And as dangerous as it was for the rescuers to put out into stormy waters, a much more dangerous thing was to lose sight of their purpose. The same thing could be said about the great temple of God in Jerusalem. Over time, there were those who lost sight of purpose and meaning of God's house. God did indeed reside in the Holy of Holies, not by command or requirement of the people, but by choice. So in 70 AD, when Rome destroyed the temple just as Jesus foretold, it didn't destroy God or God's will. God is far too big for a temple or a building. The structure God prefers to dwell in is the human heart. And so these lessons are good for us to keep in mind as we go about being Catholics. Catholics are like those rescuers, putting out into the storm to give assistance to a world in its struggle to be holy. And no matter how opulent or how plain our worship buildings may be, they mean nothing if we lose the fire of the Spirit and our commitment to conscious and lasting discipleship. Jesus also speaks to us of the end times in our gospel, both the immediate future for those listening to him then, and prophetically of the end times that all people in every age should be concerned about. And by concerned, I don't mean concerned to the point of worry and anxiety and trying to pin down the exact moment, but concerned in the manner of believers who know that to live simply and steadfastly in faith and in the practices of faith, hope, and love, this is what is needed for our security. And this is what is needed by God. It is expected by God. St. Paul says, he, Silvanus, and Timothy, we present ourselves as a model for you, that you may imitate us. He exhorts the people, work quietly and eat what you produce. Have orderly conduct. Keep busy and mind your own business. Paul and his companions lived their faith in the resurrection of Jesus and the very real hope of all believers that there will be nothing to fear from our Lord at the end of time. But sadly, like those non-believers in Jerusalem, when Roman forces destroyed the city, those who refuse God's love and grace will have much to be concerned about when Christ returns. The Temple of Jerusalem was magnificent to behold, but in the end, it was all thrown down and left for rubble. Yet God continues. And Jesus now establishes his temple in each one of us. And so the relationship between God and man must always be kept on our minds and in our hearts every moment of every day. Spirit and discipleship are a must for us. In closing, I'm going to like to pose a question. Who of us, right now, this moment, are fully ready to stand tall and say to Jesus, just arrived on a cloud, "Here, Lord, here's what I've been doing all these years. Here's what I've built. It's yours." Who of us is ready?